Good evening. Today is Tuesday, April 16th, 2024, and we are studying the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This week's chapter is There Is a Solution, and our speaker tonight is Margie. Thank you, Margie.
My turn. I'm up. Thank you, Amy. And I'd just like to thank Rachel for her service and inviting me to come share my story and my experience, strength, and hope on the first step. And there is a solution with you guys. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm not accustomed to the recording part of it. So, like in the back of my mind, it has me a little like more nervous than usual. But at any rate, my name's Margie. I'm a grateful, recovering, compulsive eater. And it's a privilege to be here with you guys tonight. My story, I'll do my best to sort of fold in my experience, strength, and hope, and like what it was like, what happened, what it's like now in terms of my physical, my emotional, and my spiritual recovery, because I do believe that my recovery is all three of those prongs, and it goes back to the imagery that people have been sharing for years about the three-legged stool, that if I pull one of those legs out, if I forget to focus on, all three components of my recovery, I'll get wobbly. I might fall over. At any rate, I found a way, 34 years ago. At that time, I had had exposure to 12-step recovery in another, in a different fellowship, but I was familiar with 12-step recovery. And by the time I had crossed the threshold into my first meeting, I was desperate. I had gotten to a place where, it was like Groundhog Day. Every day was kind of the same. I'd wake up praying that today was going to be different. I'd have breakfast, I'd get myself to work, I'd have lunch, and if lunch wasn't quite what I wanted or thought, I had lunch again. I'd go home. I would go to the gym for, a reasonable facsimile of time and come home, and dinner was my evening activity. I literally ate until I like crawled into bed and passed out, kind of hoping and praying that the next day was going to be different, right? And getting dressed in the morning and the clothes didn't fit and the, kind of shame and that reminder about not being comfortable in my own skin. In the evenings, I was eating food while I was waiting for more food to cook. Does this meeting allow specific foods by mention? Yes. Whatever. I had the big box of crunchy cereal and thing of milk. And if there was more cereal in the bowl and not enough milk, there was more milk until there was, like until there was no cereal and no milk, and the inside of my mouth was raw from the crunchies, right? And I got to a point where I knew this was not normal behavior. I started to dabble in laxatives, and I knew, like, yeah, normal people don't do that. Normal healthy people don't, overeat and overconsume and then pop a couple of pills and like think that's okay. So I knew that OA existed because a very good friend of mine was not in recovery, but a good friend of hers was. And I knew this young woman. Like I was in my early 20s. So I didn't have any preconceived notions about, like who was in a meeting or did I belong. All I know is I came in, it was a speaker meeting. And while I don't remember the speaker, I do remember the gal that was leading the meeting. And at the end, I'm like, what's abstinence and where do I get it? And she hugged me and she said, keep coming back. And I did, and I have. Basically at that time, like I was just doing this with the food. And OA taught me how to do this. And by that, I don't mean purging. I mean by this, I mean, like gathering my voice and learning to express as opposed to stuff. And when I came in, I was able to recognize pretty immediately for me that sugar was an absolute, it was my kryptonite. I knew that there was no like halfway or sometimes, or, that was my alcohol. One bite was too much and 1,000 wasn't enough. So my physical abstinence really started, putting the sugar down. And I was, with that evening activity, I was like the queen of grazing. So I learned I started 301, three meals a day, nothing in between, one day at a time. And I actually had someone tell me that nobody ever starved between lunch and dinner. Because while 301 was a great start for me, I learned how to have a meal, finish a meal, and wait a few hours. Have a meal, finish a meal, wait a few hours. There was a lot of volume because I had this fear, right? What if I get hungry? What if I get hungry? So at a certain point, I asked a friend in program. She was about my age. We had similar lifestyles. I asked her to share her food plan with me. And in a nutshell, that's what I've been doing. Made some adjustments when I was pregnant, made some adjustments as I age, because unfortunately, there is that like biological fact that as we age, our bodies need less. Darn it. But it's worked for me. My emotional and spiritual recovery is hard to quantify. I came in, with a comfortable spiritual identity. I have a religious background, but I don't think that's relevant, right? I actually had a discussion just 2 weeks ago with a newcomer who was really struggling with the whole spirituality and higher power thing. We talked for a while after the meeting, and I shared with her some of the things that I remember. When I first came around, I was going to like seven and eight meetings a week because I was desperate for what you guys had. I was desperate to be in that hour with other recovering people. And over time, as my recovery grew, as I established a life again, right, I learned how to take what we share here in this 1 hour out to the other 23 hours of the day. But anyway, I went to a lot of meetings in Center City, Philadelphia. And one of the gals at a meeting said her sneakers were her higher power because they got her to a meeting every day, right? And it was really that first shred of understanding that there is something out there and it's not me. That's just where I need to start. And, whether it's hearing my higher power through the sharing of others in the meetings that I go to, in the literature, whatever it looks like, that starting point of just it's not me. And that the foundation of our recovery, and it's touched on in the chapter in the big book, is that without a spiritual experience of some sort, the foundation of our recovery is tenuous at best. And it for me, I don't take that to mean a lightning bolt, right? It doesn't have to be epic. I have, little small miracles in my recovery and in pretty much every meeting I've ever been to. Like I've never attended a meeting where I didn't walk away with something, right, to add to my toolbox. And my toolbox is really full. Like I was so empty and so bankrupt when I came into program, and to be able to like experience the journey and trudge through the happy destiny together, like the tools that I've picked up and learned to, I don't want to say master, but things that were really uncomfortable, like there is that phrase in the big book about intuitively knowing how to handle things that used to baffle us. Like I've had that experience. I've had experiences where, oh, someone's got to go. Where I had situations that, used to baffle me, that I now have a comfort level in how and how to work through those. I will say, just tying back to some other phrases in the chapter, that it says elimination of the drink is but a beginning. That when I put down the food, that was a milestone and achievement. And every day I'm abstinent, it's a miracle. But it's also just the start, right? We come for the vanity, we stay for the sanity. That, practicing these principles in all our affairs, that the tools and the things that I've learned about how to live without the excess food and the damaging things to my body and the insanity of the noise in my head, just all that thinking about what was I going to eat and when was I going to eat and what was going to be next, and just all of that noise that kept me from being present in my life, is but a beginning. And being able to be abstinent and give service in this way is I don't want to say icing on the cake, but it's one of the pluses of this journey of recovery. There's another phrase in the chapter that talks about the loss of the power of choice. Logic, to me, like logic doesn't apply to my disease. I have a disease. Like logic doesn't apply. Here in Philadelphia, we're kind of known for our, there's a specialty brand of baked goods, right? And when I was, out there, the stuff came in 3 packs, and like to have one and put the other two in a cabinet, God bless you, right? Like that was just never anything I could do. Like the fact that the other two items were in the cabinet talking back to me, like calling my name, clearly puts me in a different category than like the normies outside the rooms, right? If food is talking to me, I clearly have an unhealthy relationship with food and I need some help. So losing the power of choice was very clear and very abundant. And I think what's really important in terms of step one and in my recovery, step one starts with the word we, not I, not you, but we. And it's this concept of fellowship that I have found to be one of the most enriching things about this program is that, mine, like many folks, mine was a disease of isolation. I did my worst eating and, my worst crazy behaviors alone. And I like to talk about the toothpicks, right? You can take a single toothpick and snap it into like 8 or 10 pieces. But if you put 8 toothpicks together, or how many are we? Like 20 toothpicks together, there's a strength in that group that's unbreakable. So as long as I keep coming back, as long as I, work the 12 steps and 12 traditions to the best of my ability, as long as I listen to those that have gone before me and those that have come after me, following good orderly direction, taking the suggestions that this program offers me, I know I don't have to go back there, right? The concept of powerlessness was also kind of an easy one for me. Like, the baked goods in the cabinet are a good example. When food's talking back to me, I'm pretty powerless. And the unmanageable part was also very obvious because, as desperate as I was to wake up the next morning and have a different kind of day, I was powerless to make that happen until I came into this fellowship. I think emotionally, in a way, it's a little hard to talk about like my emotional growth. I just know that some examples for a lot of the my early recovery, I came into the meeting and I was like quietly sobbing. And I had a lot of catching up to do, right? And I remember actually had feeling like I had this milestone where I had some experience. I don't even remember what it was. And like I had the appropriate emotion at the appropriate time, right? I got weepy, like in the midst of something that was making me weepy. I feel like, all right, I think I'm caught up. So that kind of experience only happens if I continue to do what I need to do, within the realm of my 12-step recovery. If I can touch on some of the other steps, not all of them, but just, touching on a couple. It was, again, having come in, recognizing that my life was unmanageable and I was seeking change, the ability to turn my will over to what all these other folks could offer me was also not a hardship. I was ready. I was open to it. My fourth step, my fifth step, I wrote out my fifth step and I was like writing and writing and writing. And I got to the point where I was like, all right, at some point I need to stop writing. And I said to my sponsor, you think you could come over? And she came over. We had tea and I shared my fifth step with her. And, she didn't go running out of the room with her hair on fire. And I realized through that exercise that, I'm visual. I have a lot of like, I picture things. And my backpack, which was full of rocks, right? I could start taking the rocks out of my backpack. I didn't have to carry them with me for eternity. And I realized that whatever experience, hard, tough experiences or pain, it could have a beginning, it could have a middle, and it could have an end, right? I could identify it and share about it in an appropriate way, put it in its box, and put it on the shelf. And that was a remarkably freeing experience. And it's ongoing, by the way. It's not like a one-shot deal. The seventh, eighth, ninth step, identifying my character defects. I will say for me as a younger adult, I had to really give that a lot of thought because I could think about ways in which people had harmed me. But I'm like, well, gosh, what have I done? And, there's all my in my experience, there was just a need for more time and more thought and more introspection.
Five minutes.
Because thank you. There was, certainly things to address there. And the ability to make amends when appropriate, except when to, injure those or others, was also a gift. And then, steps 10, 11, and 12 allow me to stay on a healthy, balanced path. Somebody shared with me earlier today, and actually in different work environments, people have said to me, oh gosh, you're the calm one. Like you never get riled up. It's so great. You're always so steady. And the first time I heard that, it kind of cracked me up because and here's another visual, the duck who like smoothly glides through the water, but under the water, like duck is paddling like this. I basically kind of feel like I only have so much gas in the tank, right? And I don't want to expend my energy in places that aren't helpful to me or like helpful to others. That I really try to keep things simple. I try not to, I just try to, surround myself and my family, in a healthy, positive way. Not that life isn't difficult. Like life by definition is really difficult sometimes. Over the past 30 plus years, there's been all sorts of life stuff, some really spectacular and some really devastating. But for me, there was never the option. Well, there was always the option to pick up food. But for me, I didn't have to. I had other options. I had other tools. I had other resources. So I'm just really, really grateful for that. I'll finish sharing and I'll think of all the wonderful things that I was hoping to share with you guys tonight. But, my first. I came in, it was the end of February 1990, and it was just a couple of weeks before spring holiday, around the table with all the family. And I was literally sitting on my hands waiting for the meal. There was all sorts of stuff on the table I could have picked at. And one of my sisters who is in long-term recovery in AA, she whispers, she's like, she whispers in my ear, I see you over there being abstinent. Because I was literally sitting on my hands to keep me from, doing this, right? And it's like whatever it takes. And in that moment, sitting on my hands worked for me. A little snippet of the little things. I carried in my handbag the pamphlet before you take that first compulsive bite. I carried that in my handbag until it literally fell apart because I could sneak into the bathroom at work. This was way before texting, right? And way before, like a lot of other tools that we have now. And like wherever I was, I could just give a little shot of B12 by reading a paragraph or two in that pamphlet. So the tools are beautiful. Meetings are, I always say they're one component of my healthy recovery that I'm missing out if I don't go to meetings. But if I only go to meetings, I'm also missing out, right, on literature and making phone calls and giving service and, other kinds of outreach and that kind of thing. So I'm grateful that there are different tools that help balance out my recovery. And at that point, I'm just going to take a deep breath and just say, I'm just grateful to wake up with another abstinent day, and to be with all of you tonight. And I look forward to hearing what you have to say. And thanks again, Rachel, for inviting.
All right. Thank you so much, Margie, for your beautiful lead. We will now open the meeting for questions or for 3-minute shares. As this is a big book study, sharing and questions should relate specifically to the chapter and step being studied this week. We ask you to accept this guideline in order to keep the meeting on track. If you'd like to share or ask a question, please raise your virtual hand, which is under Reactions, or *9 if you're on the phone. I will call the raised hands in order, and the Zoom host will ask you to unmute when it's your turn. Would the timekeeper please set a timer for 3 minutes for each share and announce when time is up? If the speaker is asked a question, please allow 3 minutes for the answer. So I see we have two hands First is Jana.
Hi, thank you so much. Thanks for everyone who's doing service to make this meeting possible, and thank you, Mar. Oh, can you hear me now? Did you hear anything I just said? No, okay. So sorry. Well, I was just saying thank you to everyone who was of service, and thank you to our speaker, Margie, for your really powerful share that meant a lot to me. And I just wanted to share upon one portion of this chapter that always sticks out to me. And we know it should stick out to us because it's in italics on page 24. It says, "The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink." And, this is a passage that should tell us, it's not our fault that we don't have willpower when it comes to this disease. We can have willpower in other areas of our lives, and we can, many of us are very successful. It says that too in the big book. But when it comes to this problem, we are licked. We need a different kind of power. And this book teaches us where to find it, thank goodness. And this book also teaches us a power that can help us in all areas of our lives, not just with the food. I just wanted to touch upon that. Thank you so much again, Margie, and everyone who's of service. I'll pass.
Thanks so much. Next, we have Amy L.
Okay, hi everyone. I'm Amy in California. And where are you? Sorry, I'm trying to find Margie. Oh, there you are. Thank you. I really, really appreciated your share. And I related to so much. I took a few notes. And I'm Amy, always compulsive overeater. Grateful to be here. Thank you, everyone, for your service. Something you said in the beginning was, you learned and programmed to like get out, like express yourself, what you push down. And that was so, I relate to that so much that, like, for me, it was always like I go out in the world. It was uncomfortable for me to be out in the world. I mean, even as a kid. And I would try to figure out what people wanted and try to be that. And I'd come back home feeling depleted. And food was a way to, put back in what kind of got taken out in the world. And I didn't know another way. And I think it's, I'm sorry, other thing, that you said, the step one starts with the word we. That was so powerful for me. Because I didn't know a we. I didn't feel at home in my family. I didn't feel at home in the world. And I, just walked around with that, God-sized hole that, I think we as addicts, we feel that emptiness. And so I remember the first woman, this is decades ago, who said to me in the rooms, "Look how big that W is, and we of alcohol. Look how big, they paid a lot for that font. And if you flip it over, it's an M, me, and that's, the disease of isolation." And I remember hearing in the rooms, "We were never meant to face this disease alone." And I just am so struck how, God works in mysterious ways. I mean, I just was before this meeting talking to a fellow and talking about, I still can feel like not part of a group that's just so core Amy and miss the moments of connection. And I come here, I hear you, I see everyone's faces, some who I haven't seen in a long time, who I love. Somebody reached out to me who lives less than a mile away from me in this meeting. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. I'm in California and she lives less than a mile and somehow she knows this. I don't know. It's wild. So, I'll end with that. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Amy. Next is Stephanie L.
Hi.
Stephanie R.
Hi. Thank you so much, Margie, for your share. I really, a lot of it did truly resonate with me. And in the chapter, Their Solution on page 25, the great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. And that means so much to me. Truly, coming into program, I always felt less than. I always wanted to be what you wanted me to be. And for that, I did not have a voice. And it was so hard for me to speak up and say, and claim my seat and say, yes, this is where I belong. I am an addict and I use food to make me feel better. And I have such gratitude today. I just can't imagine how my life has done such a 180, because now instead of waking up every day saying, I hate myself, I wake up and say, I'm so grateful, God. I'm so grateful that I have a life that for me is wild, is beyond my wildest dreams. It's not easy all the time. I face things that just make me extremely uncomfortable, but I have a relationship with my higher power and I have people in this program that I can reach out to and that I have to support me as I go through this journey. And it does make it so much more palatable for me to take it one day at a time when I am just grounded in the program. So if I don't wake up every morning and say my prayers and get grounded and get centered with my higher power, I know my day's off. So I make sure I do that every single morning before my feet hit the floor. I say prayers just to make sure that God is directing my day. And I'm just very grateful. And I pray I have that sense of gratitude no matter what I'm going through throughout the day. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you again, Marge.
Thanks, Stephanie. Next up, Dana O.
Can you hear me? Okay, good. I'm Dana O, compulsive overeater. Margie, thank you so much for your share. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the ways that you connect with your higher power and kind of how you bring your higher power into your everyday life. Just curious. Thank you.
Sure. Hey, Dana, thank you for the question. So my spiritual life is somewhat based on the religion of my youth and my upbringing. I was raised Jewish. I have a very positive and comfortable image and thought and relationship with the God of my understanding. How I bring that to life on a daily basis looks a lot of different ways, right? Whether it is just being still and learning how to quiet my mind and quiet myself, which is one of the hardest things I know how to do. It comes through in writing. It comes through in, you know, I don't get on my knees so much, but I do find actually child's pose, where my head is below my heart. Like there's literal and figurative, like putting my head below my heart, like allowing my heart to lead, that helps me in that stillness. you know, the serenity prayer, right? Learning to remind myself on a daily basis. And on some days it's like on a minute by minute basis, right? To turn things over and to let things go. I have the privilege of, you know, being near a beach and spending time on the beach, like being outside. Like I find that to be comforting and quieting. And it teaches me how to listen, because sometimes I'm, you know, my mind is 100 miles an hour, or, you know, work, family, and other responsibilities and other people's crises, you know, it can cloud things and make things very noisy. So all of those things help me to be quiet and still, to allow my higher power to bring me comfort and direction.
Thank you.
I hope that helped.
Very much so. Thank you.
All right. It is now 8:46, but almost 8:47 Eastern time. And we will stop the recording for unrecorded questions or shares with the Zoom host.